The meeting will come to order. Representative Doty, will you approve the minutes?
Madam Chair, I would move the minutes of the March 25th meeting of this committee.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Pass. Representative Broad. Representative Doty, would you move the bill?
Madam Chair, I would move that House File 1940 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And Madam Chair, I truly appreciate you having a hearing on this bill. It came in late, but it came in from a specific situation that a constituent of mine had, and I truly appreciate the opportunity to bring it before you today. A couple years ago, the state of Minnesota, through legislation, required all the health plans to cover students under 25 on their parents' health insurance. And a couple years ago, we changed that to take away the need for children, they call them children under 25, to be students. So now we require all the health plans in the state to cover dependents up to the age of 25, whether they're students or not. Interestingly, during that process, we exempted out the state of Minnesota from that requirement. And so what this bill does is not intend to open that up fully, although I think that's probably the right direction. I'm taking a very targeted approach to ensure that at the very least, the veterans that are returning from combat who are still under the age of 25, who were students previous to their deployment, are able to be covered under their parents' state CDIP health insurance. And that's essentially what this bill does, Madam Chair. I had a 22-year-old constituent who was deployed, who actually was a student. She volunteered for deployment through the National Guard. When she returned, she didn't want to immediately get back to school. She needed some time to collect her thoughts and just kind of decide what she wanted to do. And she was told by her insurance company and the state of Minnesota, well, first of all, they were told different things. But secondly, they were told that she was not covered any longer under her parents' insurance, even though she fit the age limits for all the other health plans in the state. So, Madam Chair, that's essentially what this bill does, and I'd be happy to entertain any questions from the committee.
Are there any questions? Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Broad, just so we're clear, this does include National Guard members as well.
Madam Chair and Representative Hamilton, yes.
Any other questions? Representative Fowles.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't mean to scare any of my Republican friends away from voting for this, but like I told you before, Representative Broad, this is a great Democrat-looking bill, and I appreciate your carrying this, and I'll support this 100%.
And Madam Chair and Representative Fowles, this is one of those that just crosses all sorts of lines, and so I truly appreciate your support of the bill.
Are there any other questions, comments? If not, Representative Doty.
Madam Chair, I would renew my motion that House File 1940 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Bill's passed.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Stillberry.
Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I'll move the House File 253 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance.
Representative Stillberry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, if I could, I would like to have that amendment A09-0244A. This would really get it in the shape that we'd like to have it.
That's your business outline. Madam Chair, I would move the A090244A amendment.
Any questions to the amendment?
Madam Chair.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Stillberry, can you just speak to the amendment, please? Tell us what it does.
If you take the amendment that is, Madam Chair, if you look on line 1.2, for example, where it says delete five or more, we're inserting more than five. So what it would, you know, do is change some of that, the number situation in this particular bill. If I can kind of explain, the way this amendment comes out is the compromise language that we have between hobby breeders, USDA, and others, kind of all along the way as we've done this. This particular bill is a combination now, or a compromise bill, between Representative Junkie's bill that was running earlier, and then now it's kind of all merged together into my bill. And in order to put this, with all the agreements that we've made all along the way, to finally put it where it needs to be is in this committee, in the policy committee. And that's where all these amendments come to play. Or this one amendment that have all these line changes is due to that compromise language between hobby breeders, between the USDA, and so on.
Any other questions of the amendment? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Pass. Thank you, Madam Chair. And what I want to do, to be right up front with everybody, is we have our testifiers that want to come forth, and they'll be very brief. They've all been told where and what they're presenting, and they want to be able to present that bill. But then I would request that we do lay over the bill, if that would be appropriate, and just to know when the timing of that would be is what I would look for.
Let's do the testimonies now, and then we'll look at it later.
Then I have testifiers, Dr. Kim Culbertson, Mike Fry from Animal Art, Barbie Bartholomew from the Purebred Doggers Breeders Association, and then Dr. Linda Wolf, and then to be answering any questions with me would be Keith Stress. So if I could start with my testifiers with this particular bill, I'll just state it to let everyone know that this particular bill is an amended effort among many different organizations and groups, and we have a lot of interested parties that have found common ground to work this out. Many of the testifiers that have come against this particular bill may not even be covered in this bill. The numbers on the bill wouldn't even be having difficulty with their particular testimony and what I've found all along the way. So I think that the problem that we have in Minnesota is that we need to have some kind of particular bill that regulates some of this industry. That's what we've really been holding to. And we're not asking to do things that you might have received emails on all throughout the week, I'm sure. But it's almost like I have to describe what the bill will not do rather than what it will do. And so I'm going to let my testifiers tell their story.
Thank you. Thank you. Say your name for the tape, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Dr. Kim Culbertson. As a veterinarian who's been directly involved with the seizure and evaluation of animals from breeding facilities for 10 years, I am here to testify in support of House File 253. Almost every animal I have examined from breeding facilities consistently shows the same symptoms and conditions: a filthy, matted coat, wounds and scabs, overgrown nails, dental disease, ear infections, external parasites, and usually multiple species of internal parasites. The parasites that the animals carry are of particular concern since they can be transmitted to humans. Filthy living conditions coupled with immune suppression from the stress of overcrowding, pregnancy, and lactation increase the incidence that the animals will be infected with and shedding those parasites. Roundworm is the most common intestinal parasite found in virtually all puppies and kittens, and in people can cause blindness and infection of other body organs, including the central nervous system. Hookworms can cause itchy and painful rashes and abdominal pain and bleeding. Ringworm is a fungus, and Sarcopteryx is a mite that cause scaly or itchy rashes in people. Toxoplasma can cause flu-like symptoms to abortion in pregnant women. Giardia can cause severe cramps and diarrhea in people. Salmonella bacteria can cause a range of symptoms from diarrhea to death in people. I would like to describe to you the medical conditions of the dogs from one of the most recent breeding facility seizures. 59 live and 2 dead breeding dogs from a puppy mill were seized as a result of a sheriff's investigation based on numerous complaints. One was euthanized immediately due to severe emaciation, dehydration, weakness, inability to stand, eye disease, and blindness. 58 were covered in dried feces. 58 had moderate to severe dental disease. 43 had wounds. 22 had positive intestinal parasite tests. 38 were underweight, and 12 of those were emaciated. 16 had skin infections. 15 had severe and painful ear infections with ear canals filled with pus. 3 had fresh lacerations on the face and ears that required immediate suturing. 2 exhibited aggressive behavior towards people and were euthanized. These findings are unfortunately consistent and predictable for the veterinary staff receiving these animals for evaluation. The cases that come to my attention are only the ones where people have seen the cruelty and reported it. Without the ability for annual inspections, there is no way of knowing under what conditions the animals are living in the facility that no one visits or accidentally finds. Many are out in the country where the public doesn't go. Not only would passage of this bill protect the physical and social welfare of the animals in breeding facilities, but would also help protect the people who come in contact with these animals from acquiring a variety of zoonotic diseases. I urge your support of House File 253. Thank you.
Any questions? Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Culbertson?
Yes.
How many of these breeding facilities have you observed this type of condition in?
I can't recall the number of breeding facility seizures I've been involved with. It's been in the 20s or 30s, but the vast majority have animals that are in this severe condition.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Dr. Nguyen, this was reported. What happened to the breeders? Were there charges that were filed?
I don't know. My role in these investigations is confined to veterinary examination. I'm rarely involved with any type of follow-up charges or prosecution.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Culbertson, were these puppies you were describing, or were they breeding animals?
In this case, they were adult breeding dogs.
Okay, so they were not going to be sold to the public. The question I had was, did they have any real market value if someone wanted to sell them?
Not monetarily.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Dostelsky.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Culbertson, you mentioned some of the conditions you've seen in some of these facilities. Have you seen the same conditions in the case of a single pet owned in a house by an individual citizen that had nothing to do with production?
So, Madam Chair, I don't visit these facilities. The animals come to me, and I examine them.
Madam Chair.
Representative Dostelsky.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Dr. Culbertson, let me restate my question. Have you seen animals that come from individual homes where there may be one or at the most two pets in the house that may have or that came with similar conditions, or has it only been these types of facilities that produce these types of conditions?
I have seen animals who have been victims of abuse or neglect in private homes, but they usually don't have the same number of conditions that the animals from breeding facilities have. For instance, one animal may be emaciated or it may have severe skin disease, but it doesn't have 10, 15 conditions like these breeding animals have.
Madam Chair?
Representative Dostowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Culberson, if you look at the demography of animal owners, of pet owners, of dog and cat owners, do people generally who own more dogs or cats or less dogs or cats know more about their animals?
In private homes, I think that the number of animals owned correlated with how much the owner knows about those animals is not valid. If I understand your question right. There are owners who have one pet or six pets who can care as well for the six pets as the one. Is that what you're asking me?
Representative Dostowski.
Madam Chair, thank you. Dr. Culberson, I think it is. Let me restate and maybe fine-tune my question. If an owner has one animal versus, say, six animals, which of them is going to have more experience with different animal diseases and animal challenges that come forward?
A person who has six animals may see more conditions and symptoms than in one animal. But in these breeding facilities where there are 20s and hundreds and thousands, you have a small ratio of the number of people caring for those animals to animals, so they cannot possibly care and care well for all those animals. And those are the cases that we see.
Madam Chair, could I just offer a suggestion? I have about four other testifiers, and I think some of the questions if we ask the questions to one testifier, I won't be able to get all the testifiers up. And I think that each one of them have expertise in so many different areas that I think that they could answer these better.
Right, and I think we should probably say two minutes per person, because I see a lot of people in the audience, so maybe we can just go on to the next.
A couple points, Madam Chair. I think we do have a number of questions, and I hope that we're able to take the time to get those questions answered, and I have until May, so... one thing I'd like to bring up, Madam Chair, is I would like to remind all the people sitting around here in this room to please be respectful to all the testifiers.
And we only have this room, I think it's at 10:30, maybe it's a bit less than that. So that plays a little part, too.
Madam Chair, could I just finish up on my follow-up there? Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Dr. Culberson, back to the thread of communication we had. So which of the types of owners across the demography would have more experience dealing with animal diseases and animal management challenges that would normally be brought with them? Would it be the owner with one animal or with multiple animals?
Senator, I'm not sure what information you're trying to get out of me, but across the demography of people in Minnesota, veterinarians and veterinary technicians and people who are used to seeing and treating animals with diseases every day would be best suited to identify those problems.
I'm through, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. Say your name for the tape, please.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Barbara Bartholomew, and I represent Minnesota Purebred Dog Breeders Association. We support House File 253. Minnesota Purebred and breeder representatives from other breed organizations have been involved over several months in the writing of House File 253, and are in support of this current amended version. Like any issue of importance, House File 253 is not without controversy. There are breeders who will never support or be comfortable with any form of regulation. Today, Minnesota Purebred Dog Breeders Association and the other breeders who worked long hours and many months to provide the best possible bill ask your support of House File 253. Thank you for your time.
Representative.
Don't go too far. Yeah.
Representative Faust.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When you probably have a pretty good idea of the people that are opposed to this bill, what is their greatest fear or concern that they've got?
Speaking from my own conversations with a variety of people, their fear is of being regulated in any way. Most of these people are very reliable, responsible breeders, and there has been instances where they have felt they have other folks have been invaded, their homes have been invaded, their breeding practices have been invaded for no apparent reason. So they're afraid of some of the things that might come down the pipe. We have seen in other states seizures of animals that on the surface seem as if they were not warranted. And so I think that's where the fear comes from.
Thank you very much.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Bartholomew. With the Minnesota Purebred Breeders Association, have you thought about doing anything like a quality assurance program or anything like that, to where it's more of a, in addition to the laws that we have in place, to do also a group or self-assessment within the association to make sure that the best management practices are being followed, laying out guidelines and stuff like that.
By the members of our organization?
Yes, Madam Chair, and to the testifier.
We don't do that per se on a yearly basis. What we do is we have kennel visitations when there is an applicant to the organization. They have to go through an extensive process where there are several readings done of their application. That application is very detailed as to the number of dogs they have in their facility, how many litters they may breed a year, a variety of other objectives. Once we start that process, we then arrange for a team, usually two, maybe three people, depending on schedules these days, to go out and do an actual inspection of their kennel facilities. And we also have a form that we use that's separate from the membership form, is the kennel visitation form that we use. We hold annual meetings every year where the breeders come together. We do education for the community and for our members. We bring in speakers and help people with breeding practices and so forth.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Bartholomew. In the event the team would go out and they would make an assessment and they would find that there was animal neglect, what then would take place as far as the from the organization? Can they continue to be a part of the organization?
No. We would have to do another investigation. We would talk with the kennel owner, and according to our bylaws, we would take whatever action necessary, but they would not be, if the conditions were severe and we thought it not appropriate for them to be members, but they would be denied membership. And if they were severe, we would report that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Any other questions? If not, thank you. Again, say your name for the tape.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mike Fry. I am the Executive Director at Animal Art. I would like to give a special thanks to Representative Tilbury and everyone else who's been working on this issue. It's obviously something that I feel strongly and passionately about. And to keep your time relatively limited, I'm going to limit my testimony to just dispelling three simple myths about this bill. The first is that animal welfare organizations or animal shelters like mine will not fall under this regulation. Technically, that's true. We're not mentioned in this bill, but for the last 20 years, the Board of Animal Health has already been inspecting my animal shelter. We are already licensed. We are already inspected by the Board of Animal Health to the exact criteria laid out in this bill. So, I mean, just let that sink in a little bit. I mean, nonprofit small animal shelters are already covered by the exact standards and criteria that we're simply trying to extend to large-scale commercial breeders. Myth number two I'll cover very quickly because, as Barbara Bartholomew testified, people have been saying that breeders have not been involved in the development of this bill, but obviously that's not true. We've worked with small breeders, we've worked with mid-sized breeders, and we've worked with large-scale breeders who have all come together to develop this language. The third piece that I would like to just mention is there's this idea that we have existing laws that work. I sent you all an email yesterday and a hard copy today of a letter from Otter Tail County Sheriff Keith Van Dyke. He clearly makes the case that, in fact, our laws do not work. He was the lead investigator in the Kathy Box case. She was recently convicted of animal torture and cruelty. And while some people have said that's proof that the laws work, I'm here to tell you that she's still operating her business. No animals have ever been seized from that property. She still has her USDA license. And the only way anybody was able to get onto her property was when what most people would consider an animal rights group went undercover. Prior to that, the sheriff's department had no probable cause to even get on her property, even though complaints at that facility date back more than 20 years. So after 20 years of these chronic ongoing complaints, she's finally been convicted, but still operating her business. So I think that that case clearly proves that our existing laws do not work, and we need House File 253 so that we can simply get the Board of Animal Health into those facilities and have those inspections that I'm already subjected to at my nonprofit animal shelter. So I urge your support of House File 253. Thank you.
Are there any questions? Representative Gostelski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Fry. One of the things and one of the concerns I think many of us have with this bill is that it appears in more than one case to be a direct violation of the Fourth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, illegal search and seizures, and really denies people of probable cause. Have you thought about that, and how do you process that in relation to this issue? Are you willing to have people have their property searched and seized in violation of the Constitution?
Madam Chair, Representative Drzkowski, I am not going to pretend to be a law enforcement official, because I'm not. I do know that we've engaged with several people who are law enforcement officials who have added their thoughts and ideas to this language. And I would suggest that, given the fact that my animal shelter is open and transparent, is already subject to the exact criteria of this, I don't feel that my shelter is experiencing any violation of our constitutional rights. We've never had any animals seized from our property because we are not committing animal abuse on our property. And so, you know, I guess you would have to ask a law enforcement officials maybe to answer that question. I don't see it as a violation of anyone's constitutional rights because I don't see anything about breeding dogs in our Constitution.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Fry, would you agree that dogs are property of people?
Madam Chair, Representative Drzkowski, They are, but they kind of fall in an unusual in-between category because our laws recognize them not only as property, we also recognize them as living beings, which is why we have animal cruelty laws and why we don't treat them like a table. They're different than a table, which is why we have our cruelty laws and why we're, I believe, obligated to enforce those laws.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Fry, I want to thank you for being a good actor when it comes to caring for animals. You mentioned something about the size of operations. You're focused on large scale. Does the size of the operation determine, in your professional opinion, whether or not the producer, the breeder is going to be a good actor or a bad actor?
I would answer, Madam Chair, I'm sorry, I can't see you. This is your Representative Hamilton. I think that there's a direct correlation between the size of an operation and the levels of abuse that you see. And there's another factor that is overlaid on top of that, which is the size of the operation, the larger they get, the more difficult it is for animal enforcement agents to deal with the abuse that takes place. In fact, if you were to call Detective Van Dyke, he will tell you one of the reasons they were unable to do anything with Kathy Bach is they're in this small rural community and they have at different times between 500 and 1,200 breeding dogs on that property. They had no capacity to go in and take legal action against those large facilities. And so that's why I would suggest that abuse does happen with smaller breeders, but local animal control, local sheriffs are more capable of dealing with that without outside assistance. Once you get to 30, 50 dogs, 1,000 dogs, some other assistance is clearly needed.
Representative Morrow.
Madam Chair, I'll pass right now.
Representative Olin.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm not sure this is the right person, the wrong person, or who is the right person. But one thing I'm seeing on this list of people is a whole lot of different special interest groups. But yet, I'm not sure they represent all of them because I know I have an amendment that I'm going to bring up later today from another group. And I'm, who on earth made the decision that X is on, Y is not, Z counts, A doesn't? Who made this decision?
Madam Chair, if I could answer that question, Representative Olin, to the best of my ability, I can try to answer that question. This is a complex issue. You have so many different groups representing so many different areas. The bill itself has been confused many times to represent things it doesn't represent. And so when you're trying to put together a regulatory piece, you try to get all the stakeholders that you know of to come together and decide where this should fit, because we don't want to have this particular bill be for the typical pet owner. You know, there was so many that came up, and you know as I did in other committees, that said I don't want a law that says in Missouri that has an 8-foot leash and that will affect how we do things here in Minnesota. And it has no bearing in this particular legislation. All we know now is that we have a lot of places that are operating out there that don't have any rules or regulations to follow. We even have USDA people that will come to tell you today that they would like to have some regulation happen because some of the people that are USDA licensed are saying, why do I even have to get licensed if I go and do what they're doing? So I'm not going to be able to tell you every single group has been in my office about this. We have gathered many people as we have gone, and there's been many in response to this saying, hey, we don't like this part. And I know that I had conversations with you about that particular amendment that you're going to offer and saying, yep, I understand where you're coming from. I know that what the group is saying. Now, in order for it to match up with what they say, we'd like to discuss that with you too. So I think this is the way, this is a perfect example of what has been happening throughout this particular bill. Is as we go along, we have moved, changed, to try and satisfy the stakeholders as much as possible, but yet still be with 25 other states that have at least the basic regulation. And that's what we're looking for. Because I know a representative in Illinois, for example, is running with his particular legislation in Illinois and has been showing all their committees what has been happening in Minnesota is what not to do. So I'm a little bit worried about that. And so I think with this particular bill that we're looking for the basic regulation that can happen that allows us to know who's in our state. What are they doing in our state? And if they're operating at the best way possible, that's where this bill is.
And I'm not going to argue my amendment at this time, but the hunting dog breeder that I'm, or the hunting dog group that I have been contacted with, I can find them all over my district, and nobody's talked to them.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Bennett.
If I could just say one comment. I found out about that particular group this week. Mm-hmm. And so when I'm thinking of that, that's just the way that the legislation is flowed.
Mm-hmm. Representative Ma.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I'd like to remind us of Representative Hamilton's important words at the outset. I think Representative Hamilton, this does need a full discussion. I think that Representative Tilbury is trying to get there by hoping to lay the bill over, continue the discussion, make sure. This is one way. Now it's on people's radar. More people can come in even this week and talk with Representative Tilbury and others. And I also agree with Representative Hamilton that we have a lot of testifiers, and we'd like to hear from everyone. We want to be respectful of each person's input. And certainly maybe we can also direct our questions. When we have law enforcement, we could ask the law enforcement questions. When we have a vet, we could ask the vet questions. Because there are a lot of people, folks here, who would like to speak, and time is, unfortunately, at a premium.
Representative Shostakovsky.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Fry, you had spoken about, and I want to thank you too for your work in caring for animals. You had spoken about you thought the greatest problem was with larger facilities. I'm still struggling to maybe understand the demographics of dogs and cats and where the greatest concentrations are, and you know, if we look at all the dogs and cats that live in Minnesota, I would expect that most of them are going to be in private households, one or two at a time. Probably, I would have no idea, 80-90%, maybe higher. So it would seem to me that if we're looking to solve the problems of animal abuse and neglect, that would be the place to go. I'd be interested in your comments in regarding that statement.
Madam Chair, Representative Drozdowski, excellent question. Although I think that when you look at the breeding industry and you look at the total number of animals in the state, we're kind of mixing two different issues. And the way I look at this is twofold. Number one, no bill is ever going to prevent animal abuse in all its forms, in all environments. When animals are in people's homes, my experience in working in this field for decades tells me that those are the animals that are most likely to be reported to law enforcement officials, and that's because, you know, people's homes are open to other people who come into them. At some point, the animals at a breeding facility become so large that they're generally not in the house anymore. They're moved into a pole barn out on the back 40, and nobody sees those dogs. And so that's the issue, the transparency issue, the awareness that we need to get people on the ground who can actually do something. And so while we might... there might be more animals in homes, I think that's maybe not the way to look at this. The issue is where are animals being, in effect, hidden by this industry that we need to shine some light on?
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Fry. My question would be, if there is a bad actor that doesn't want to be found, you know, what's
the license going to do to bring that person to the surface?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Hamilton, the way this bill is structured is it would allow the Board of Animal Health to go in and inspect those facilities, and it instructs the Board of Animal Health that if it sees violations of animal cruelty, that it would report those to the local enforcement officers. So it gives them a mechanism simply to enforce the laws that are on our books now. We're not creating new care standards. We're not raising the bar. We're simply saying, if you're going to operate a large-scale commercial for-profit breeding industry as business, we want to verify that you are meeting the basic simple animal welfare statutes that are now on the books.
Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Fry, again, everybody around this table here and in this room wants to make sure that the animals are well cared for. I don't think if there's anybody that disputes that, raise your hand, we'll have that discussion. But again, getting down to the bad actors, if they don't want to be licensed, the Department of Health, the Board of Animal Health, is not going to know where they're at, per se, or how are they going to know where they're at if they don't register or become licensed?
Madam Chair, Representative Hamilton, that's a very good question. I think the bill addresses the issue of them going undercover and hiding really well, in that there's a provision in this bill that requires that commercial breeders list their state license number in their advertisements. You know, anybody who's selling large numbers of dogs has websites, they're advertising in the newspapers. I mean, they're publicly in business. And so asking that they simply list their state license number in their advertising is an easy way to help find those people who are not licensed, because they won't have a number to list, and they'll have a regular stream of ads or websites that they're doing business through.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Welcome, and say your name for the tape, please.
My name is Dr. Linda Wolf, and I thank you, Madam Chair, and committee members for allowing me to talk. And I'm going to make this brief because Mr. Fry covered quite a bit of what I was going to cover. I have been doing veterinary medicine and in the veterinary medicine field for over 30 years, and have quite a bit of experience with working as an expert witness, consultant, inspector of commercial breeding facilities. In that capacity, I have run into some problems that this bill will definitely correct. I'm very much in support of this, and I hope you support it also. As Mr. Fry said, we have the cruelty statutes, we have the animal care statutes on Minnesota laws now. What we don't have are the teeth to uphold these laws. And I'll just give a couple quick examples, and then I'd be happy to answer questions. Last year, I was an inspector and testified in Morrison County about a puppy mill that they were trying to get a permit to run a commercial breeding facility there. This person had numerous USDA citations against him in a previous facility that he was at and ran. And the current facility he had could not pass our current laws, Minnesota animal care laws, in a number of different parameters. He was given a permit to run a facility. Last week, I was the expert witness testimony veterinarian at the Kathy Bach trial. This week, she was convicted of animal cruelty and animal torture. The same person had received she was convicted of practicing veterinary medicine without a license. She was also convicted numerous times of other USDA regulations that she did not meet, and yet she had been allowed to continue at her facility. It was also brought up in the trial that she knows when inspections are coming from USDA. She testified that she did, and the sheriff also testified that she was aware of this. So even though USDA comes and inspects, many of these facilities already know when they're coming and they do actions to correct problems that are at their facility during the inspection. That is why I really urge that this bill that you're looking at now get passed. We don't have the teeth. We don't have the abilities. You mentioned about going into facilities as they're going against the right of the people. We need to be able to inspect facilities without notice so that those sorts of things that happened at this last trial don't happen again. If there's any questions you have, please ask, but we really need the teeth. I've seen it firsthand. We need this bill badly.
Any other questions? If not, thank you.
Thank you very much.
And Madam Chair, I just have one testifier left, and then I'll just have closing comments.
Say your name for the tape, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Keith Streff, and I'm the senior investigator for the Animal Humane Society based in Golden Valley. And I'd like to just state for the record that the Animal Humane Society in Golden Valley strongly supports SF-253 and would also encourage your support. My testimony is going to be relatively brief for the sake of redundancy as well. But I would like to take a tack that I think hasn't been completely expressed so far in testimony in support of this bill. And that is, as an investigator for 22-plus years and seeing hundreds, if not thousands, of various animal-related neglect cases that are in direct violation of existing animal welfare law, I have a pretty strong feeling and opinion in regards to the commercial operation as well. And I'd like to just make a few points here that also tries to demonstrate what the bill does not do. This particular bill is not going to affect search and seizure with any, certainly it's not going to subrogate existing laws. It's not going to ban any group of people. It's not going to prevent anybody from breeding. It's not going to allow circumvent due process. Everything that we're currently doing today is currently going to be done if this bill were to pass tomorrow, with the exception that this bill now gives law enforcement communities across the state an opportunity to inspect, to license, and then subsequently regulate a multi-million dollar industry that today has no regulatory oversight. I think what's being confused here today with existing laws and how what our existing statutes do versus what this law will do is that from a regulator, from a regulatory perspective, we have no opportunity to curb or control what an individual such as the Kathy Bach case here that's been demonstrated can do in the future. So this bill, in my eyes, as from a law enforcement perspective, is much like the liquor industry. The liquor industry has a regulatory application for anyone that sells liquor. However, if individuals are violating the existing laws regarding serving to minors or doing whatever you're not allowed to do in a bar, it eliminates the aspect of being of making crime profitable. So if you're doing significant more gross revenue in a liquor industry by selling to minors and you do that over and over and over again, it's a misdemeanor offense, it would be profitable to sell to minors over and over again. But as a result of the liquor regulatory language, at the end of the year when your license to be renewed, local law enforcement will go in front of that council or in front of that county commission or whatever it is and say, we've had 4, 5, 6, 8 cases of incidents, we need to stop that, and we're going to suspend your license. So, in my opinion, I don't feel that this is an issue that changes existing language. It's something that's going to regulate an industry.
Representative Olin.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This is going to be brief. One of my biggest concerns is most of you people in this room realizes the cost factor, which is nebulous and doesn't get argued in this. But Mr. Streif, I realize you're right on the liquor industry, but the liquor industry, as I understand, when we do licensing there, has a procedure and has money on hand before they put the thing into effect, is it not?
Madam Chair, I would like to at least, this is the policy committee. I know if it goes to the finance committee, we'll have all those questions we're going to have to answer. I think you do serve on that, Representative Owens. I know you'll have a crack at that apple.
No, I do not serve on it. That's why it's here.
I thought you did. But I just think that if we can get through policy, I'd like to try to do that.
Representative Owens?
But I think in the long run it does affect policy. But if we don't want to get to that, that's fine with me. I think it very much affects policy because it affects the policy of what exactly the Board of Animal Health is going to be able to do in the future on all things involving the agricultural world, and all things involving animals, not just this. So I think there's a lot more policy issues on that than you think there is.
Any other questions?
Just a quick one, Madam Chair.
Representative Hamilton.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, I stepped out. To the testifier, are you with the Humane Society of the United States?
Madam Chair, Representative Hamilton, no, I'm not. I am employed by the Animal Humane Society that's headquartered in Golden Valley and has five shelters in five different cities serving five different counties here in the metropolitan area.
Madam Chair, so two separate organizations?
Madam Chair, two completely organizations, different organizations.
Thank you.
Representative Zdowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Streff, I'm assuming that animal control officers belong. Is there an association of the organization, a Minnesota Animal Control Association? Are you a member of that?
Madam Chair, Representative Zdowski, I am not an individual member of it. Humane Investigations and Animal Control are two different agencies, if you will. We're in the same church, but a different pew. Animal control officers are employees of government subdivisions, and humane investigators are officers employed by a private 501c3 nonprofit organization similar to ours, which is the Animal Humane Society in Golden Valley.
Madam Chair?
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Streff, I've got a copy of the Humane Society of the United States tax returns from 2007 in front of me, and they contributed grants to over 700 organizations throughout the country, millions and millions of dollars. One of the granting organizations was the Minnesota Animal Control Association. I was just curious if you were aware of that activity and the extent to which their influence is involved within our state. I'd be interested in any comments you might have around that.
Madam Chair, Representative Drzkowski, I'm quite confident that the Humane Society of the United States, being an animal organization, is very active and very involved in PACs and contributions of a number of things related to animals. However, the Animal Humane Society here locally, as a district humane society, takes animals in and puts animals out on a regular basis, over 38,000 animals specifically for our organization alone. Questions or related issues involving what HSUS does or how they do it, I would think should be directed to their organization. There might be members here that can speak for them. But in this particular case, I try and focus on what good this bill is going to do and how we can work locally with local law enforcement and individual agencies that are asking for our assistance on cases where they have numerous reports of animal cruelty or neglect, and they would like our expertise in getting that addressed, and currently it's not working as well as it should.
Any other questions? If not, thank you. The next person, Frank Vanessa.
Hey, Madam Chair. Could I ask Mr. Streff one more question? No. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Streff, you had talked about illegal searches and seizures, and I look at the bill, and Section 5 says explicitly that animals may be seized for a violation of Sections 347.58 and 347.59 And there is, a, I mean, it, certainly you would have to admit that the bill, if passed and adopted into law, would be open to the courts for their interpretations around searches and seizures.
Madam Chair, if I could take just a second, are you reading from the amended version of that? Because remember, that part was amended.
Madam Chair, Representative Tilbury, I may not be.
And that was the language that was agreed on afterwards by, you know, the stakeholders, so they did change that seizure piece. So if you want to look at the amendment...
I do see that, Representative Tilbury, now. I still wonder whether that would require a warrant in order for them to come out to the property and exercise that part of the statute.
Madam Chair, Representative Duskowski, my interpretation is not. I don't think this bill significantly segregates existing language in regards to due process. As an officer, no matter what the circumstance, if there is a situation that would require an animal to be seized, there would be an opportunity for due process. However, I understand your question in regards to that individual would have to incorporate legal action and costs to challenge that particular seizure. But this is really what the intent of the bill is to focus those particular our actions on those particular cases that are the most egregious. And if you take a tool away from law enforcement that does not allow them to make discretionary decisions under exigent circumstance where that animal would need to be seized for the sake of the health or life of that animal, I think we're losing a significant tool. I can't think of in 20 some odd years of handling animal cruelty cases, I can only think of one case where there was animals that had to be returned as a result of a glitch in regards to the decision that was made to seize them.
Thank you. Say your name for the tape, please.
Madam Chair, my name is Frank Lanasa. I am the current president of the Minnesota Field Trial Federation and trustee for the Amateur Field Trial Clubs of America. I appreciate the opportunity to come and testify. There are two points that I really want to make, two quick points that I want to make today. The first point is kind of a general observation. I've been coming down here for the last 3 years as this bill has gone through. The marketing of this bill has quite honestly been in a way without any substantial data or documentation supporting it, has really crashed an entire industry of retail breeders, of which most of my associations are. Retail breeders have their kennels walked through every day by the public, by customers. They are under constant observation. They're not in the back country. They're not without. They're not operating under the radar. They're right out in front, and yet they have amongst a lot of other groups been packaged in a nice little basket, and that basket has been thrown at their feet, trashing their good character and the good work that they do. I needed to get that off my chest. It's something that's bothered me for years. The second point that I want to make is as a doing what I do, I am very much in tune with the retail sporting dog industry. This industry has been generated or has produced animals not through the profit motivation but through performance. It is a very expensive venture and time-consuming venture to select the breeding animals. The Labradors, the Beagles, the Setters that you see that are some of the most popular pets in the state of Minnesota come through this process. It is a process in which training kennels are very much a part of, and training kennels would fall under the definition of commercial breeding with this bill. These people receive 90% of their income through training and development fees. Maybe 5-8% of their income comes through actual breeding. Yet their entire operation will be fall within this bill. They will be regulated, asked to complete lots of paperwork, be subject to unwarranted inspections of their properties, their homes. It becomes a quite simple business decision that if 5% of your business operation is mandating you do all of this for the entire operation, you have the proverbial tail wagging the dog. These people are simply going to get out of the breeding business. And so we are removing from the breeding business of sporting dogs the very people we want breeding, the very people producing the great dogs that we have had in the state and for Minnesota buyers for decades, for generations. And I oppose this bill because these people are targeted unfairly, and the result will be that Minnesota will have worse quality and smaller amounts of quantity of the great sporting dogs we've come to have in our life here in Minnesota. So that's what my main reason why I oppose this bill.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the testifier, you are inspected by the USDA?
No. My understanding is no retail breeders would be inspected by the USDA.
Do you have other inspections then, Madam Chair?
No. I'm not... you know, I don't understand the legal aspects of the inspection. My understanding with kennel operations today, they are licensed by local townships and counties under their statutes, but they are not regulated because of their retail status. I think the assumption is that people come in and out of there every day. They are inspected literally 365 days a year by the public.
Representative Olin.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and I don't know if this is the appropriate time or not, but since we're bordering on my issue, I would like to move at this time the A2 amendment.
Can you tell us about your amendment?
Okay, the A2 amendment came about because of a group of hunting type personnel, and to a certain degree it might overlap into his subject, and what it does is would exclude them. It basically reads quickly, private kennel means a kennel where dogs are kept or bred for the purpose of hunting, tracking, exhibiting dogs to or field and obedience trials, and where the act of buying, selling, trading, or breeding is not the primary purpose. So I think it comes awful close to his issue, and that's exactly the motion I would like to move now. There's a group of people that has contacted me, not necessarily just the only person that you may think is contacting me. There are people in my district concerned about this issue.
Representative Tilbury?
Madam Chair, I know that this particular proposal and where it came from, we would only make a suggestion or offer an oral amendment to that. Because they get it from the Pennsylvania law, and there's a word change that should take place. Rather than having private kennel listed, it really should say more of the commercial breeder, because we don't have that type of language in our particular law. So that would be something that we would want to consider. And then the last phrase after obedience trials, where it says, and where the buying and selling, and then all of that, we would not want to have that last sentence if possible, but we would stop after trials, obedience trials, and then we would accept this amendment with no problem.
Representative Olin?
Madam Chair, for purposes of this meeting, and had I received that wording yesterday, I could have probably figured out if it fit or not, but the people that have contacted me want the wording as is. I am not amenable to putting on different wording.
We're on the A2 amendment. Any other questions? If not,
anybody want to testify to the amendment?
Does anybody want to testify to that, that amendment?
Madam Chair.
Representative Morrow.
Madam Chair, if I could just ask Representative Tilbury, that was a little, I think Representative Tilbury and Representative Olin understand the distinction they were drawing. I still am not clear on the distinction, Representative Tilbury, that you were drawing from this amendment.
Madam Chair, Representative Morrow, there's just some confusion as far as where they determined the language and where they got it from, and they're basing it on Pennsylvania law. And all I'm requesting is that we make it Minnesota, not. And so when they use the words like private kennel, we use ours as commercial breeder. And so it's just varying of words. It's something that really should be probably worked out between myself and Representative Olin and the particular stakeholders that are asking for this amendment to be on.
Representative Olin?
Quite frankly, Madam Chair and Representative Tilbury, I have never seen the Pennsylvania wording. So if this is actually something that was supposedly part of the bill that I was looking at, I haven't seen that wording.
Representative Rostowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm kind of confused here, but Representative Tilbury, beginning of line 1.4 in the amendment, the definition is provided right in the amendment. So I don't understand where it would be vague at that point.
Madam Chair, the commercial kennel, where it says the definition, it also talks about private kennel. I mean, I'm just having Pennsylvania law that this was particular based on. They want to adopt something like they have and pump it up to fit within the Minnesota, to follow their same intent, but yet put it in Minnesota language. That's all I'm asking for.
Representative Jody?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Tilbury, I, like Representative Morrow, I'm still a little confused here. Are you saying then that really this, is your point that this belongs under section like hobby breeder, for example, that's in our language here? Rather than private kennel, which would be a new term in Minnesota law, is that the distinction we're looking at here?
Madam Chair, when we look at the amendment and it says private kennel means a kennel, we're asking that not meeting the definition of commercial breeder. So I've been confusing people accidentally here. So that's what we want, is the terms to not meeting the definition of commercial breeder to be inserted there. And so the intent is to have it say what they want to say, but have it in terms that we have.
Mm-hmm. Representative Olin.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. For purposes of this hearing, I would like to pass it in the form I've got. Had I gotten this amendment yesterday, I could have, or this wording that Representative Tilbury is now proposing, I would have looked at it. But to try to contact my people back home and to contact anybody else that's worked on this at this stage is absolutely impossible. And I made 3 calls trying to, but I haven't caught anybody. So I'd request that we vote on the wording I presently have, and I'm asking for a roll call.
Representative Morrow.
Madam Chair. Representative Tilbury, I understand that Representative Olin just got this language as well, and I'm not faulting Representative Olin. Are you willing to talk to Representative Olin and the folks who wrote this message? Because you said this is still an attempt of work in progress, and there are people you still need to talk with.
Madam Chair, Representative Morrow, that is the intent to do this. That was the whole intent of this particular hearing just today, to continue conversation. And so I just think this could get cleaned up.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question would be to staff, does this conflict with Minnesota law in any way?
Yeah. Madam Chair and Representative Hamilton, if I can just explain briefly what happens on line 1.2. Right now in the definition of commercial breeder in the bill, it says that it describes the definition, but it exempts hobby breeders, which are defined. So the relationship between the new private kennels as defined here and commercial breeder is established in the same way in line 1.2. We say commercial breeders meet these qualifications but do not include hobby breeders or private kennels. So the relationship between private kennels, which would also be exempt from commercial breeder licensing, like these hobby operations, is established in the amendment. So, Madam Chair, so there, you know, there might be a discussion about the definition of private kennel, but I think the relationship between the two is clear in the amendment as drafted. And, you know, the policy decision the members want to do that, but I think we're set.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
I went for a long, but yes, I didn't refer to line one, page, the first 1.2 of my amendment when I said it, but it did add all private kennels, so it is tied together.
Roll call has been asked for. We'll take the roll.
Representative Doty.
Aye.
Hamilton.
Yep.
Krakowski.
Aye.
Eakin.
Aye.
Bowes. Cat. Morrow.
Aye.
Olin.
Aye.
Kamansky.
Aye.
Erdahl.
Aye.
Kukremba.
Aye. Nine ayes and two absents. The amendment passes. Any other questions? Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Linasa, how does a breeder become a member of the Field Trials Club?
In Minnesota, typically, the Field Trial Federation is an umbrella organization of which its members are breed clubs or performance clubs throughout the state. So if you had a, let's say you had English setters and you wanted to become a member of the Minnesota Grouse Dog Association, by virtue of joining that group, you would fall within the federation group. So that we are not a group of individuals, we are a group of clubs.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Representative.
So, thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Linasa, to the best of your knowledge, then, the clubs that you would encompass, if there's a bad actor that is associated with one of those clubs, will those clubs take the appropriate action to discontinue their membership or turn them over to the authorities?
Absolutely. No, it is. In our sport, and it has been a sport of over 100 years, there is absolutely no tolerance for any abuse or any bad care of animals. And in fact, it reflects so poorly on you that it would be so counterproductive that it makes no sense to act in that way.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Any other questions? If not, thank you. Robinette, I don't know. I don't know how to pronounce the rest of the name, so you'll have to tell me when you get up to the. So say your name for the tape.
My name is Robinette Dunnehy Ralston, and it is a nightmare name. I apologize for that. I am a veterinarian in the Twin Cities Metro. I have worked throughout my veterinary career with a reproductive specialist in the Twin Cities, as well as a general practitioner and with animal control in two different cities. I don't have nearly the expertise with the large scale that you've already heard about. Mine is more of a, I see pets on a day-to-day basis. So I have been strongly opposed to this bill, and my primary reason, multiple of you guys have heard a couple times, is that it doesn't really address the issue of animal cruelty. And if the laws need teeth for animal cruelty, that is one thing. If they need teeth to enforce breeding practices, that's another. I think we need to protect all of the animals in Minnesota, not just those that are used for breeding purposes. So I would like to see our legislative actions work on getting things preventing that. So that's my personal mantra. So I've done additional training in my career for reproductive specialties in all animals. And so I do have a little bit more experience with that than general veterinarians. I think that we do have things in place that already can handle a lot of the issues they're discussing. Many of the breeders that I've dealt with are high-quality breeders. And I think that this will negatively impact many of them, causing a lot of harm to their industry. The logistics of how this is going to work, if this bill passes, is remarkably confusing to me. And we're going to have licensing, but again, we kind of discussed already here today, how are we going to find those people? People that don't want to be licensed are going to disappear, and then we're going to have issues with public health, which also concerns me from a veterinarian perspective. We're going to see things coming like rabies. They aren't going to be getting their vaccines as they should. They aren't going to be getting dewormed as they should, because all of these dogs are going to start going into hiding. I also am concerned about, if we do end up having like a statewide licensing, who's enforcing that? You know, is it veterinarians? Are we going to have to do that on a regular basis? Or how global is this going to go, and how big is it going to become to actually mandate all of this within the Board of Animal Health? I also believe that within my profession alone, there's a lot of training that needs to happen. If we are going to be the ones that are going to have to be going out as the separate entities to look at these facilities, most veterinarians don't deal with breeding animals, and they don't see what they look like on a day-to-day basis. A female dog, after she gives birth, to some people might look emaciated and know if her coat is falling out. It is naturally normal for a female dog's coat to fall out after breeding. These are things that, if you're not actually experienced in this area, to leave it open to any veterinarian walking in, they might not have any experience. Dental disease, things like that, you see them every day in veterinary practice. It's not even remotely uncommon. One of the biggest cruelties I personally see is obesity, and that's not something that this is going to address at all. I also am very concerned about something that was mentioned a little bit briefly earlier about what sort of impact this is going to have, taking efforts away from what the Board of Animal Health is actually prepared to do. And, you know, currently they're working a lot with our tuberculosis problem in the northwest part of the state, and I'm concerned we're going to start taking focuses away from things that are causing industry-wide problems to our cattle producers, Guillain's disease, all of these things that the board actually is mandating right now. With the number of employees that they have, it just seems unreasonable that this is going to be something that's going to fly. I think that will go more under finance as well. There are reproductive specialists, of which I am a special interest. I am not a specialist in the Twin Cities Metro, that could certainly be consulted if they want more information on this, and they certainly have more experience even than I do, and I don't think any of them have been contacted up until this point. There's really no research out there. I think it hurts bad breeders. There's laws in place that really need some teeth added to those, and I think the constitutionality issue that's already been raised kind of covers it. So if you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them.
Representative Hamilton.
Madam Chair, are we scheduled until 10?
10:30.
Okay. Until 10:30. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions? Representative Szymanski.
Madam Chair, just considering the time and the list of testifiers yet, I would urge the testifiers to move along. But we do get to hear from everyone listening.
Thank you. Representative Olin.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd also like to point out to the testifiers, if this bill is actually to be laid over like they're saying, this is not the last time you'll have a chance probably to ever say anything that reappears. So keep that in mind when you get up to testify.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
I'm going to call somebody up first, or do you want to talk? Well, I'm going to call somebody up so we have people kind of lined up. That would make it faster. Representative Ruskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Ralston, just quickly, do you think Minnesota's animal cruelty laws are working?
From what I have seen, yes, because again, what I see on TV of these seizures, they're actually being implemented. What happens after the fact and whether they keep their license is another issue that needs addressed. But the cruelty laws themselves appear to be working.
Thank you. Susan Black and Terry Franson, those will be the next two.
Good Madam Chair, members of the committee. It's been represented that this has been like the stakeholders were there. Oh, I asked to be on this committee and I wasn't asked or wasn't allowed to. My name is
Can you say
Susan Black.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm the legislative chair for the Samoy Club of America. The Minnesota Purebred Dog Breeders is about 70 member households. It's one of 13 kennel clubs. I represent the National Samoyed Organization. We have about 100 members in Minnesota. 25 of them are breeders. So there's a huge number of breeders that aren't even touched by the Minnesota Purebred Dog Breeders. I was at my vet yesterday, a specialty vet, who isn't here, unfortunately. And I said, you know, if this hits 20, how many, I asked the girl at the desk that's the head of the of all the paperwork there. I said, how many of your clients would hit 20 dogs in co-ownership? And co-ownership is something kind of specialized to dog showing and dog breeding. And she looked at me and she said, oh, all of them. So this kind of process of co-ownership, of why I put my name on a dog that's sold, is for several reasons. One is if the people die, I want that dog back. I don't want it going into an estate. I don't want it going into humane society. So that's one of the reasons I do it. The other one is to mentor people. I usually mentor someone 2 to 5 years before I allow them to breed a litter. And when those litters are bred, they have my name on them. So you cannot register a litter with the AKC unless all of the owners agree to it. So it's something that holds them back. So when you look at somebody like me that comes in and does this, we are a force behind all the dogs. The dogs you see at Westminster, all of the dogs that are out in the show world, and we have like 374 AKC events in the state of Minnesota. Each one probably brings between $300,000 and $500,000 into a community in tourism. Dog show people go all over. This is all money that's coming into the state, and that may not really hit policy as much, but if this bill goes in, I am listed that. I probably bred on the books about 10 litters last year. Now, at this point, we are looking at about 400 bills across the nation. Dog breeding is being attacked by about 30 states. The HSUS promised us 34 states that we would have to fight. There are a number of concerns that I have with the kinds of laws that are coming in. Basically, the animal rights movement wants to eliminate animals. They want a meatless, petless society. And so a lot of these laws are being driven from places that, you know, nobody wants cruelty to animals, but I don't think there's an understanding about where all this stuff is coming from. Now, the individual concerns that I have for my own property, my dogs are, I have a kennel license, there's no way I can hide. I have house dogs, there's no kennels. My dogs, you come in to inspect my facility, you are coming into my living room, on my carpet, you're coming into my bedroom. I have huge biosecurity issues with somebody who goes to some of these other kennels, and then we work really hard to make sure parvo never comes onto our land. There's a lady in Wisconsin that had parvo, a reputable breeder, and nobody ever goes there. We never bring puppies there. 20 years later, we still don't bring anything onto her land. You're talking about taking somebody that's going from some of these other kinds of facilities, and it could come in their tires, it can come in on their clothes. I really don't think that a small kennel of my size, even though I hit some of these 20 dog things because of co-ownership, and yes, I could take my name off all these dogs, but that's just trying to go by the letter of the law. I think we really have a huge fear that somebody's going to come in and hurt our business. I mean, what it is we do. This is about love. This is about almost all the discretionary income from breeders like me goes back into the dogs. The thing that Robinette said about rabies, I don't think people realize when you're making punitive laws and forcing people to go into the books, rabies is the only way that we keep rabies from coming into the communities is by vaccinating dogs. I had about 20 kennels in Europe that have asked me for dogs, and there's no way I can ever produce what they want. But so this one in Denmark, they made me look under the law. They said, well, you can't have, I don't remember exactly what it was, but it's like within 30 miles of my home, I couldn't have rabies. I looked. the only place in the state of Minnesota that I could actually breed a dog and raise it and be able to sell it over there is way up in the Boundary Waters. There's rabies everywhere. If you create a scenario where people are hiding animals and they are not getting vaccinated, you are setting up a risk factor for that rabies going back into the human community.
We need to go a
move
faster.
Along. Right. Thank you. Okay, what else do I want to say?
Hey, Madam Chair?
I guess that's it.
Representative Dostelsky.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One quick question. Ms. Black, same question I had for Ms. Ralston. In your opinion, are the animal cruelty laws in Minnesota working?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you.
I mean, if you walk into my facility and there's something wrong with my dog, people can say something. It's not difficult.
Thank you.
Terry Franson.
Oh. Order here.
We'll do Cindy Reaver. And then we'll have Terry Franson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cindy Reaver. I'm from Perm, Minnesota. I've been a USDA licensed breeder for approximately 28 years. We have to comply with rules and regulations. We do have unannounced inspections. I've never had my inspector call and tell me she was coming. And although I personally feel that our state laws are good enough, I also am afraid that at some point we're going to get something new pushed on to us. And I would like some protection for my business that I have been in all these years. The language on Bill 253 is not 100%, but I guess I would like it to move forward and continue on working on the issues to settle these problems, and I think that's what this committee hearing was for. We have a list of issues that we will provide to the House for clarification, and this would also be contingent on a reasonable fee with a cap of what I feel approximately $250 is appropriate. I'll make it short, so thank you for allowing me the time to speak.
Representative Dostelsky.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Ms. Reaver.
Mm-hmm.
In your opinion, are the animal cruelty laws in Minnesota working?
Madam Chair, committee member, in my facility, they are working just fine.
Representative Hamilton?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Reaver, you're talking about the fear of additional regulations keep coming down upon you and individuals like yourself. And it came across as if this was some sort of a compromise to temporarily appease one segment of society, if you will. What are the fears, if that's the case, I'd like to know that. And what are the fears that one segment of society won't stop here and they'll continue to come back over and over and over again to try to regulate you right out of business?
As I said, we've been doing this for 28 years. This is our business. This is our life. And we've been down here for 3 years fighting. And quite frankly, it takes time away from my business, time away from my family. And if we had something in place that protected us in what we do, the ones that do it right, we could be left alone to do our business. You will find no animal cruelty in my town.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Reaver. With the animal cruelty laws that are in place, and you're with the Minnesota Pet Breeders,
yes,
correct? We heard testimony earlier from purebred breeders and stuff like that as far as having quality assurance programs internally, and in the event there was a bad actor, there are ways not only to deal with them, to have them cast out of the organization, but also to turn them over to authorities. Is that also with the pet breeders as well, with your organization, if there's a bad actor, is there ways to deal with them also?
Madam Chair, Representative, we do have bylaws in our organization that does deal with that, and if convicted of, I believe I would have to look to make sure with cruelty, they are not allowed to be a member.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And sitting up here and listening to your testimony, I understand how time consuming this is and everything else, and it does take away from your operation, which sounds like it's a very good one. I, along with many other people, are very concerned that if regulations like this are put in place, that this is the proverbial camel nose under the tent, and they will continue, others will continue to come back and continue trying to regulate your business until you are no longer in existence. And so my question back to you is this truly needed, or are you just saying, look, I'm tired of fighting this, I'm just giving up, and hopefully this will all go away?
Madam Chairman, committee member, in all honesty, yes, I am tired of fighting this. And I do feel that our rules and regulations are good enough. However, there are people out there that do need to be addressed. I don't know what the answer is, but there are people that need to be handled in this industry.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I am not tired of fighting this.
May I say something?
Please.
I have to drive 3.5 hours one way to get here. So when I come down for a committee meeting, it is an all-day thing. In fact, we came down last night and spent the night. So it's not that I am tired of fighting it. I am tired of being taken away from my business and what I do.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you. And Jack Swenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Terry Franzen. I'm a breeder from Staples, Minnesota. I serve on the board of directors of the Minnesota Pet Breeders Association and am also a proud member of the Minnesota Farm Bureau. My kennel is USDA licensed, and twice annually they inspect my facility unannounced. I'm inspected annually by the American Kennel Club as well. My veterinarian also makes house calls to our kennel several times throughout the year. This may sound surprising to you because the last 2 years I have been strongly opposed to this bill. And while I'm not looking for additional regulations, what I'm asking from you is some protection for my business. I want to continue to invest money in my business. I want to continue to be in business 5 years from now, 10 years from now, and possibly pass it down to my children as well. So what I'm asking you for is for some protection that I know that I can continue investing money into my business. I would also like to be able to get on with my life and not have to continue to come down here every year. So I'm asking for your support to continue to develop this bill. The language has come a long way from when it was first introduced. Like I said, this is the third year, so there have been some negotiations this year that have taken place and compromises have been made. There are still a lot of issues of great concern to me, and many of those are the questions that you've already asked. So there's still a lot of work to be done before I can give my approval to all of the language. So what I'm asking for is to be able to have the opportunity to continue to work on these issues. I've made a short list of some of these specific concerns within the language. I don't know if you want to address those today due to the time, but if you want, you're more than welcome to ask me any questions as well. Instead, what I would like to explain is why I would like to see a state licensing program implemented, provided it is done correctly and that it gives me that protection that I'm looking for. This industry has continually grown over the years, and as in any industry, there are good people and bad people. Unfortunately, the ones that are bad get the negative publicity, and in turn, then, because of all this publicity, the public is left to question the credibility of all breeders. My primary goal that I think a state licensing program would achieve is to renew breeder credibility and give consumers confidence in purchasing puppies and knowing their puppy came from a facility that has been inspected by Minnesota's Board of Animal Health. I have a lot of faith in the Board of Animal Health. I think they're real common sense people. We've spoken with several people from the staff of the Board of Animal Health, and I'm very comfortable with them. And, you know, if a program was implemented that had them doing the inspections, I guess I would feel comfortable letting them into my facility. The majority of my puppies I do sell retail. Oftentimes I'll get phone calls from people that they really want to buy a puppy from me, but they're kind of scared because they say, how do I know you're a good breeder? Because we've heard all this hype about puppy mills and unreputable breeders and bad facilities, and they want to know how they can be assured that I'm a good breeder. And while they could come to my facility, that's oftentimes not feasible because they're from located throughout the country. I raised several rare breeds of dogs, and they can't come to Minnesota from California to look at my facility, so they want to know how they can be assured that I'm a good breeder. If a program were put into place, I could then reply to that question and say, I'm licensed by the state of Minnesota, I'm inspected by the Board of Animal Health, I can even put on my website my certificate that says I'm in compliance, and I guess that would be my best way to prove that I'm a good breeder. Unfortunately, the USDA has, in the public's perception, lost some of that credibility. They do very good inspections. Our inspector is very, very strict, but where they lack is they cannot stand up to the public and justify that they are a credible agency. I have many more details I would love to talk with you about, but in the interest of the time, I will just conclude by saying that while not all aspects of this bill are acceptable, I hope we will be given the opportunity to continue to work on the language. If you would like to hear some of the specific items in the bill that I think need to be worked on, I can certainly share that with you, or if you have any questions.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the testifier, you were seeking protection. Protection from what?
From... we're all lumped into this category of, all breeders are lumped into a category together, and unfortunately in the media, that the term puppy mill is given to, all breeders can be lumped into that category, and we need a way to set ourselves aside from that. In my business, I'm continually looking for ways to prove that I'm not a puppy mill. I do eye certifications, I do hip certifications, I do knee certifications. Every place I can try to prove to people that I'm not a puppy mill, that's what I'm looking for.
Madam Chair. To your knowledge, under this legislation, can a puppy mill become licensed?
Under the current language, I believe, as it has been revised, that somebody who has been convicted of animal cruelty would not be able to get a state license.
Madam Chair, so maybe this is to the author. Is the definition of a puppy mill, is that someone who abuses animals and only someone who abuses animals?
Madam Chair, Representative Hamilton, it's up to the perception of what puppy mill is.
Exactly. And Madam Chair, to the testifier one more time, does this bill guarantee you the protection that you're looking for?
It's not 100%. It has come a very long way in doing that. Like I said, I really have a lot of faith in the Board of Animal Health and being very, very credible. And I think the public's perception would also be that the Board of Animal Health is very credible. And for some reason along the way, the USDA has lost that credibility.
I'm sure.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and you're right. As far as the Minnesota Department of Agriculture is very credible. We have a wonderful animal health system around here as well. I thank you for being a very quality breeder, and I hope and pray that you continue telling your story and your friends tell their stories as well, because not everybody's in that same category. Deal with the bad actors accordingly, and let people like yourselves live and continue doing what you do, and make sure you're out there in the forefront sharing your story.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton.
Representative Zaskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Franson, thank you for your testimony and for your hard work in the industry and what you do. I share Representative Hamilton's sentiments. Please don't give up the fight. Freedom is worth fighting for, and we seem to be on the cusp of freedom being removed from people who are very good people, and the vast majority of breeders throughout this state do a wonderful job, and it's unfortunate that there's a movement forward to try to really almost convict those people of doing absolutely nothing wrong and throwing them in with the bad actors that Representative Hamilton talked about. I'm concerned about the ability for you to have a future market. The Humane Society of the United States, we know their effort is to remove the ability for you to sell to a pet store or to anybody else or to retail your dogs. That's very troubling. I have another question for you, and it's related to your operation. If we have inspectors going from operation to operation in Minnesota, I'd be interested in your comments about the impact that that may have on the biosecurity of your operation.
Madam Chair, Representative Dostalski, when our USDA inspector comes to inspect our facility, she, part of her equipment that she brings along is like some disposable booties that she puts on. She usually, you know, if she ever touches one of our animals, she always washes her hands right away. Their standards are very high as far as not passing on any diseases from each facility. And I guess the measures that they take into consideration are satisfactory and that can be controlled.
Thank you, Ms. Franson. Madam Chair?
We only have a few minutes, so there's still a lot of...
One quick, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I would move to table this this item and call for a roll call.
It's not negotiable.
It's not debatable, Madam Chair.
I'm not just debating it, I'm just saying procedural steps to get that.
We're going to do a short recess. The committee will reconvene.
There's a motion to table the bill. Take the roll.
There's a motion to table the bill. We'll take the roll.
Representative Doty.
Aye.
Hamilton.
Yes.
Dostalski.
Aye.
Duchin.
Aye.
Faust. Morrow.
Aye.
Olin. Szymanski.
Aye.
Erdahl.
Aye.
And Otremba.
Aye.
8 ayes and 3 absent.
Committee adjourned.